Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to give a huge shout-out to my awesome patron, Mr. Big Bence, for supporting my show over on Patreon. If you would like to help me create more awesome content, you can head on over to patreon.com/mtginquarantine for more information. And last, but certainly not least, I'm very pleased to announce that I am going to be having a giveaway to celebrate the 100th episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast, where the winner will receive one of their choice of the new Innistrad Midnight Hunt Commander decks that drop at the end of September. If you're interested in getting your name into this drawing, all you need to do is go on over to twitter.com/mtginquarantine, find the giveaway post, and make sure to like the post, retweet the post, and follow my account on Twitter to be able to be entered into the drawing to be eligible to win one of those commander decks. You can also earn an additional entry by answering the following question as a comment on the giveaway post on Twitter. And that question is, what is your favorite janky and or card that you believe is heavily underrated in EDH? Make sure to leave this card as a comment on that post on Twitter to earn that additional entry. This giveaway will be live until the end of August, so make sure to get your entries in now. Good luck! Now, on to the 100th episode. If you've seen the episode title for this episode, you probably know that this is the 100th episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast, so I figured that I would like to have a very personal episode be the topic of today's podcast. And that personal episode is going to be the five EDH decks that I feel have most come to define me. Now, this was something, a trend that was on Twitter about a month or so ago. There was a lot of people, a lot of other creators in the community, talking about the five decks that they felt from their entire history really came to define them as players. Obviously, a lot of other players have played the 60-card constructed formats. I unfortunately haven't, so I'm going to be using my EDH decks and my EDH collection for this exercise. And again, I wanted to give myself some ground rules here. I wanted to really look at the decks that I feel have really not only come to define who I am as a player and who I've become as a player ever since I started the podcast, ever since I started playing Commander a couple years ago, etc., but I also kind of wanted to take a look at the decks that I feel have come to define my growth and progression over time. Obviously, if you've been listening to these podcasts for a long time, you've probably heard my one-year wrap-up episode where I really went into depth about the process of creating the podcast here, the MTG in Quarantine podcast, and really how I feel like I've progressed over the last year and over the last 2 years in general as a Magic player. But I feel like on today's episode, I really want to touch on some of the decks that I feel have really been touchstones or milestones, if you will, in my journey from beginning EDH player all up until now, where I am an established EDH player, I'm an established podcaster, and a really interesting member of the community to be around. So again, I'd like to go basically 1 through 5. There's really no particular order to any of these. I basically just went in order, I guess, that they're here on the table with me. So without further ado, I'd like to get into the five EDH decks that I really feel have come to define me, MJ from the MTG in Quarantine podcast channel, as an EDH player. The first deck that I'd like to talk about actually was my first deck, my first EDH deck, that is. And that was my kind of, well, actually, I shouldn't say kind of, my extremely janky Glissa the Traitor deck. Glissa the Traitor is a 3/3 zombie elf from all the way back from the Mirrodin Besieged block, who effectively allows you to play around with artifact synergies. I originally had her as my commander because I really liked the combo of First Strike and Death Touch. That's always really nice. But again, what I really liked about the deck, and again, I don't have this deck anymore, for obvious reasons, and I've talked more about this in previous episodes because it was my first deck. But what I liked about the deck was that it was really my first foray into the format. But instead of going with something like a pre-con or, trying to find a deck list online, I wanted to build something that was specifically my own. I didn't really know much about Commander, if anything at all. I'd watched a couple of videos online really quickly before I went to my first Commander event. and I wanted to make sure that I had a deck that was uniquely me. If there's something I hope you have heard on previous podcast episodes here, is that I really love unique builds. I love trying to find unique cards that do weird things that people are going to remember for a long time. So even though my Glyphs of the Traitor deck technically was three 60-card kitchen table decks smashed together with really very little synergy, the idea was that I was trying to find my ground as an EDH player, and I really feel like that deck has come to define me as an EDH player in the long term because it was my first chance to really start trying to find something unique and variable that other people weren't necessarily going to understand what was really coming. I mean, we as EDH players sometimes really like a lack of variance. We like something that is very tangible, something's very known. And while that is nice, and I definitely have built some decks that have definitely gone along with things like EDH Rec and have really kind of fit the party line, I suppose, or for lack of a better term, I really got started trying to build unique decks from my very first one because, again, I didn't really understand synergy that much. I was just trying to make a cool deck using some cool cards that I liked. And over time, I've been able to utilize my increasing understanding of the rules, increased understanding of the cards, interactions, synergy, etc., etc., to be able to take that same concept of building something unique and really being able to make it a better, more well-oiled machine of a deck than my first deck. But again, I had to start somewhere. And I am going to be forever grateful to myself for building that deck, because it allowed me to really define what I have always sought to get out of EDH going forward. The second deck I'd like to talk about on today's episode, I think really starts to demonstrate the point where I really began to turn the corner as an EDH brewer. My first couple of decks that I began to build, obviously after my Glyphs of the Traitor deck, I was trying to understand synergy better. I was starting to play more Commander. I was seeing a lot of different cards. I wrote a whole bunch of cards down in my notes feature on my phone that I just thought were really cool and I wanted to take a look at. And I built some decks that were very, very quote-unquote straight up. A lot of things that really fit the obvious synergies with my Commander. My Queen Marchesa deck falls under this category. My Alayla Artful Provocateur deck falls under this category. Rinse, repeat. And I built some decks that I felt had a lot of synergy, and I wanted to try to boost the power of those over time, as a lot of younger players, or a lot of newer players, I suppose, are want to do. And it kind of got to a point where I felt like my decks weren't unique enough anymore, that I really needed to start trying to build decks that I enjoyed playing. And again, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed playing those decks, but I wanted to start finding decks that were a little different again, kind of like my Glyphs deck was. That was that when people saw Marchesa, Aristocrats, they knew what to expect. They knew that I was going to be playing a lot of the same cards in my Alayla deck because she's a very powerful, or they're a very powerful commander. And I wanted to start getting an experience of building something new. So this was about the point late last year in 2020, where I started to really push myself back towards my roots, I suppose, in janky build, and start trying to build something new from scratch that people hadn't really seen before. So the second deck that I chose for today's episode is my Kothafed Soul Hoarder deck. And Kothafed is not a very popular commander. He's only got about 30 decks to his name on EDH Rec. And unfortunately, has kind of come with the stigma that a lot of people in the community say he's quote-unquote unplayable because of Smothering Tithe or other cards. And yes, that is very possible. I have died due to the Kothafed triggers, where whenever a permanent leaves the battlefield under an opponent's control, I draw a card and I lose one life. So yes, I have lost to being decked, or, you know, being killed by damage through my own commander. And yes, it is painful. But I really enjoy that Kothafed deck, one, because I decided to choose a commander that was very out of the spotlight, but also provided me a very good advantage in the command zone, but also because it was the first time I really decided to get really experimental with my card choices. And I'm referring to, in this deck, the Tron Lands. Yes, the Tron Lands, Urza's Power Plant, Urza's Mine, and Urza's Tower. And these lands, I just had them sitting around, honestly. I wanted to do something with them, but I wasn't quite sure what deck to throw them in. And obviously they're extremely powerful when they're all together, but when they're not together, they're just three lands to tap for colorless. And you need all three to be able to get all seven mana, and obviously anyone who's played Tron in a constructive format knows a lot more about this than I do. But I thought with my commander allowing me to draw a whole bunch of cards, potentially, that maybe I'd organically be able to draw into these cards. So obviously I've kind of waffled back and forth, maybe including something like an expedition map, you know, something that would allow me to maybe tutor for one of those cards. But I've never really come up to a definitive decision whether I keep the tutors in or not. And frankly, most of my most recent iterations of the deck have not included any tutors. Because if there's something I really enjoy about EDH the most beyond unique decks, it's variance. I just really enjoy variance in EDH games. And the fact that I could try to assemble natural Tron using my Kothafed deck, just using Kothafed's triggers to try to get those three lands onto the battlefield simultaneously for seven mana, started to become kind of a mini game for me. And yes, if you're wondering, I've only managed to actually get natural Tron my Kothafed deck once. But the one time that I was able to do that, I still remember I was playing in my local play group, and I was able to get natural Tron, and we had a great old time. I lost the game, but that doesn't matter because I was able to get the natural Tron. I felt like my deck did the thing that it really wanted to do, beyond the thing that Kothafed really wants you to be able to do, which is draw cards, destroy your opponent's permanents, etc., etc. I was able to gain a secondary achievement by getting natural Tron together. So I really feel like my Kothafed deck was the first place where I really started to experiment with, well, I could do this one thing which Kothafed wants to do, but what happens if I decide to change the stakes a little bit and I add something completely goofy in there? And yeah, a lot of people have never expected that card to come down until I drop, let's say, an Urza's Tower, and all of a sudden, wait, whoa, what's going on? What are you doing? Oh, you're trying to do Tron? Well, that's pretty cool. And once I hear that sort of thing from someone who I'm playing EDH with, I know that I've won the game, even if I don't actually end up the victor. Because I feel personally like that card choice, all of a sudden, it creates a conversation, and people are always willing and interested in hearing about the weird, unique things you've done with your deck. So that's really why I put that card in there, and that's why Kothafed is my number two deck to define me as an EDH player. My number three deck as an EDH player actually was something that took me a little while to figure out exactly what I wanted to go with. So if you've heard my intro to the channel, and again, if my Glitz of the Trader deck was my first deck, obviously. So I started Magic out with a 60-card kitchen table Golgari Death Touch tribal deck. So I really started out playing Magic, really loving green, really loving black. But if there's a guild pairing that I've really come to love over the last year or so, it's been Boros. And again, a lot of this has to do with the fact that a lot of people in the community have said that Boros really sucks. And, well, I can't necessarily refute some of that statement. Obviously, red and white have been a little bit behind the other colors, I suppose. The fact that Boros really hits the things that I want to do, which is turn creatures sideways and beat face, has really attracted me to the color combination, and I really just love going on a red-white aggro beatdown. I have several Boros decks that I've played in this vein, and I really enjoy playing all of them. But the one that I really think has kind of come to define me the most, just as my weird Magic player here for number three, is my Alabeau Ancient Witness deck. Alabeau was the second commander out of C21 Lorehold Legacy's precon, as a 4-5 golem costing 3 red-white, and reads, other artifact creatures you control have haste. And whenever one or more artifact creatures you control attack, so again, this is one or more of any artifact creatures, including Alabeau. Alabeau, Ancient Witness, deals X damage to any target and you scry X, where X is the number of tapped artifacts you control. And so when I got the Lorehold Legacy's precon, I saw Ozgear as the face commander. Obviously, we're looking at Boros artifacts, looking at recursion, tokens, etc., etc. And I thought, well, you know, that's kind of cool, but where's the beatdown? For me personally, I love the beatdown. So how can I try to win with this deck doing damage as I normally like doing? And I immediately realized Ozgear is not going to do that for me. But Alabeau, the secondary commander here, will do that. And I started to build around that after one game, and ultimately I kind of tore the precon apart, unfortunately, and put a whole bunch of interesting cards I had in my collection in the deck, and I think it works a lot better for my personal style. I love the fact that Alabo can ping someone in the face for 8 to 10 damage, and then I can scry a whole buttload of cards just by attacking with an artifact creature. And also the fact that those artifact creatures have haste, so I'm able to throw out a whole bunch of really beefy artifact creatures that do a lot of damage. And if you've seen me on Twitter, you know that I'm a huge, huge fan of Darksteel Juggernaut, which is a star creature that gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control and has to attack each combat if able. So all of a sudden, if Alabo is on the field, I have my Darksteel Juggernaut, it has to attack, and I can then use it to not only hit someone, hopefully for a lot of damage, but also be able to ping them off my commander and scry a whole lot of cards. So I've really found that this Alabo deck really fits what I do as an EDH player, because I tried something different in this color combination. I looked at Oscar and it just didn't really work for me. I wanted something that was on the Boros beatdown. So again, sorry to everyone who really liked Oscar. I guess I just didn't really see that as an interesting option personally. And I ended up making a Boros deck out of this. A beatdown deck, and I really enjoy playing that deck for that reason, is because I was able to take the theme that I really enjoyed out of the pre-con, which was the giant beefy artifact creatures, and I was able to make it work using some cards from my collection, as well as just having a commander option in there that really worked for me. So again, my Alabo Ancient Witness deck is the number 3 EDH deck that I feel really defines me. Because even though Lorehold attempted to change the Boros concept, the Boros color pair, color identity, I still ended up making it Boros. So, you know, that's just me being a Boros fan. And again, that's why it's my number 3. The number 4 EDH deck that has come to define me over the last couple of years here has definitely been one of my favorites to talk about on the show here, and that is my Selenia Dark Angel deck. Again, if you listened to my amazing episode with my good friend Coach J-Roth, aka the Unsummoned Skull, from a couple of months back, we did discuss our own personal Selenia build, as well as speculated on how a couple of our closer friends would also build Selenia decks, because while we both have a deck around this reserved list card, J-Ro and I built our decks very differently. And I ended up building my Selenia deck around having Selenia effectively useful whenever I need her to be. So I like utilizing her as a blocker. She's a 3-3 flyer who I can pay 2 life to return her to my hand for 3 white and a black, a total casting cost. And I really enjoy being able to have Selenia out because I can always use her to declare a block with and then pay 2 life and return her to my hand to be able to negate someone's attack. So the ability to be able to utilize her as kind of a absorbable blocker, I suppose, as well as allow me to have a way to pay life into some of my life-paying, life-loss synergies in this deck is really nice. But again, I didn't go all in on the life loss. I actually put a lot of life gain bits in this deck because I wanted... this deck was originally built because someone in my play group wanted to have a deck that they could play where they could try to gain some life, but also use life as a resource without utilizing the usual life gain payoffs being Felidar Sovereign, Aetherflux Reservoir, things like that. And so I took this as a personal challenge of how can I try to get both life gain and life loss in the deck and still have the deck be somewhat decent and still kind of win through the way I would win, which is usually through combat damage. And ultimately, the Selenia deck came to be. I really enjoy this deck, not only because it's the only deck where I actually run Necropotence in, and again, I'm not running for any sorts of combos, I just kind of like being able to drop an awesome gold-bordered version of Necropotence in the old original 1995 or 96 art, but I just really enjoy the deck because it is a little bit zany. There's a lot of cards in there that don't necessarily make sense in that deck, but once you play against it, or once you play the deck, you start realizing that they all kind of fit with each other. I do run a lot of powerful cards in there, but I also run some cards that are kind of silly. And it really fits with my deck building philosophy that you don't have to have everything have 100% synergy or obvious synergy in order to be able to have a fun deck. I always have a lot of fun playing the Selenia deck because there's just so much variance in that deck that it really works for me. And But again, you don't have to necessarily get rid of the most powerful cards. I am playing quite a few powerful cards. There's a lot of synergies in here. Font of Agonies is in here, which is great for when I'm paying life off Necropotence or paying off Selenia or one of the other many times I'm able to pay life in this deck. And, or, you know, the greed-like abilities, Erebos, things like that, where I'm paying life to draw cards. Well, all of a sudden, I'm able to utilize that, pour it into Font of Agonies, destroy opposing creatures, try to control the board. So in a way, it's kind of an Orzhov combat deck. In a way, it's kind of an Orzhov control deck. In a way, it's kind of a weird Orzhov reanimator deck. In a way, it's just a very fun deck that kind of does a whole lot of things, but a whole lot of nothing sometimes, too. But really, what I enjoy about the deck is that it's resilient, it's got an interesting commander, and it's not really a linear deck. It has a ton of variants, and I just love that deck to death. So number four EDH deck that defines me as an EDH player is my Selenia Dark Angel deck. If you want to hear more information, definitely check out my episode with J-Ro talking about our Selenia decks in the Selenia and Me episode from a couple of months ago. And last but not least, the number five deck that I feel has really come to define me as an EDH player. There really was no discussion, there was no issue for me, I suppose, trying to figure out what deck this was going to be. It was always going to be five-color, colorless Najeela. My very good friend Peter, aka Mono Whiteboarder, challenged me a month or two ago to try to build a Najeela deck utilizing a whole lot of interesting land choices. Effectively, he challenged me to try to build this deck utilizing only colorless lands. And I kind of thought about that for a few moments after he messaged me on Twitter about that. And I thought, you know, this is either the dumbest thing I could ever do or the smartest thing I could ever do. So, like any good deck builder I am, I built the deck and I have it right here in front of me. Is that Najeela is one of those commanders who is extremely powerful, very CEDH viable, and just even if you try to power her down, she's still really good. So the concept for me when I got my copy of Najeela in an amazing etched foil from Commander Legends, thank you Wizards of the Coast, the concept was how can I try to bring the power level down to play in my local playgroup? So what I ended up doing was just rifling through my long box of cards, trying to find any land that I could that would only tap for colorless, or, on the caveat, could filter for colored mana, but I had to pay some sort of alternative cost to be able to get there. So what I ended up doing was having 35, 36 lands in here that only tap for colorless, including Wastes, which can only tap for colorless, with a couple of the filter lands like Unknown Shores and Painted Bluffs, which can tap for colored mana, but require me to put in additional mana to be able to filter the colored mana out. So utilizing this restriction, I tried to build myself a decent Najeela deck that could still function the way any regular Najeela deck wants to by getting extra combat off the Warrior Queen, but without having any regular basic lands that would produce colorless, or that would produce colored mana, excuse me. So what I ended up doing was filling the deck with a whole bunch of mana rocks, kind of random mana rocks, honestly, to try to make sure that I could get colored mana. Obviously, I'm trying to get to five, trying to get to Wooburg to be able to activate Najeela's ability, and I do have a couple of warriors in the deck that do help the deck go along. But I really enjoy being able to kind of toy with my opponents a little bit that, you know, they whenever they see Najeela, and this has happened, whenever they see Najeela, it's just, oh no, Najeela's going to do crazy things, ah! And it's just, well, yeah, of course, that's what I'm trying to get to. But on the other hand, I have a weird sense of humor in that it's all colorless lands. And then people are just really interested in seeing what I have, because, oh, well, that seems interesting, tell me more. And then it allowed, again, just like with my Alabo deck, just like with my Kothafed deck, I feel like when that happens, you're starting a conversation at the table. And all of a sudden, it's not necessarily about winning or losing. It's about, I'm proving a point that I can do this. And you can still have a deck that functions fairly well. Now, is it going to be the most powerful Najeela deck? No. Could I build a better Najeela deck even if I ran a whole bunch of Guild Gates and Dual Lands? Sure. But I think what's really endeared me about this deck over time is the fact that it's just so unique. It's so weird. But I just love how weird it is, because it's really the culmination, I feel, of my evolution as an EDH player. I started with a whole bunch of decks jammed together. I went through a phase of trying to build very synergistic decks that were very powerful, and then over time I realized that I wanted unique decks that really started a conversation, because that's what I really enjoy out of EDH, is not necessarily power. I mean, again, I do enjoy higher power games too, but I really enjoy the conversations that you're able to get at the table when you bring cards to the table that either people have never heard of or that people are never expecting. So just like running the Tron lands in my Kothafed deck, I also run the Tron lands in my Najila deck. Again, I'm not really looking to draw them. They're just in there because they tap for colorless. And if I somehow get natural Tron, even better. But again, they're not going to allow me to activate Najila's ability because they don't produce any colored mana. So in the end, it's a real puzzle to try to solve. But once all pieces of the puzzle go off, the deck really works. And if anyone is wondering, I did recently come within 2 mana of actually winning a game with this deck a couple of weeks ago over on with my friends on the Neon City beat. So again, it's one of those things where I really do enjoy playing this deck, and people never really expect this sort of thing. But once you talk to them about it, once you tell them that, you know, I want to do this as a personal challenge, it's the Rule Zero conversation. People are usually fine with it, and it really reinforces, I suppose, how awesome this format is, that you can take such a powerful commander like Najila and try to build something so unique that no one's ever heard about, that people will always remember that they played against. Doesn't matter if you won, doesn't matter if they won, but they will always remember the time they faced the 5-color colorless Najila deck. That is my number 5 deck that has come to define me as an EDH player. I hope you really enjoyed this 100th episode and this introspective into the 5 EDH decks that I feel have really come to define me as an EDH player. If you'd like to hear any of the back catalog of the MTG and Quarantine podcast, including many episodes where I've actually talked in more detail about these decks, you can find the entire back catalog of the MTG and Quarantine podcast on the usual podcast outlets. That's Spotify, Google, Apple, Player FM, MTG Cast, CastBox, and quite a few other podcast outlets. You can always find me on Twitter at MTG and Quarantine. If you find the very happy-looking Ulamog wearing a pair of headphones, you found the right place. And again, before I end today's episode, I'd like to give another shout-out to my awesome patron, Mr. Big Benz, for supporting me over at patreon.com/mtgandquarantine. If you want to help me create more awesome content and support the show, you can find more information over at patreon.com/mtgandquarantine. All right, everybody, you've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. It's been awesome having 100 episodes in the books here, and I hope that there's going to be at least 100 more going forward where I can make more awesome content for great people like you. You've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.